up, fools? This is the QTR Podcast. Today is June 29th, 2018. I was so close to getting Peter Schiff on the podcast today. I said, Peter, you want to do my podcast today at 4 o'clock? He said, that's when I'm doing my own podcast. I said, can't you move your schedule to accommodate me? And I did not get an email back. One of these days, my schedule is going to line up with Peter's and we'll get him on the podcast. It won't be long either, too, because he sent me an email a couple weeks ago telling me, look, I've really been meaning to do it. So we'll get him on here one of these days. Anyways, it's not as if we don't have stuff to talk about. It's Friday, so I don't want to take up too much time, but there are a couple of things that I wanted to cover, and they're about Tesla. Can you believe it? It's just like I keep saying I don't want this to be a like all Tesla podcast, and it's really not. When I look back, I'm looking back at my last few podcasts. The last one was political. The one before that, we had Ross Gerber on, so we had to talk some Tesla. And we had Christine Richard before that and Kenny Polcari, and we talked about Uber prior to that. And then my last Tesla podcast wasn't, it was back on May 29th. Is that possible? Shit, I only did 1, 2, 3, 4 podcasts in June. Well, we gotta stop that. So it's been a minute, and it's like I said several times before, the company keeps giving me news to talk about. If there was nothing to analyze and the company was just cranking out 5,000 Model 3s a week and it was making cash, I would shut up, I would apologize, I would stop being critical, I would say that I was wrong, all of those things. And if you're a Tesla bull and you're listening to this, just rest easy in knowing that. I want you to rest easy in knowing that if Tesla turns around and executes, that I will come on and I will offer Elon Musk an apology, and I will offer the company and those that were long the stock an apology. And I will be forthcoming in saying that I just simply did not have the vision to see the bigger picture unwind the way that it was going to, and I'm an idiot. There you go. But until that day, and as long as the company is still building cars in a goddamn camping tent outside of its main facility, there are probably going to be a couple of small criticisms that I think are worth analyzing. And I know I say this all the time, but I just want to say this up front, okay, for people. I don't have any personal beef with the company. I don't have any personal beef with its investors. I think the thing that intrigues me about Tesla, and let me make some admissions up front, okay? I had previously invested in an alternative energy company years ago that I actually went to go and work for. And it was a company I believed in, it was a vision I believed in, it was a product I believed in. Ultimately, it didn't work out the way that I predicted that it would. Despite having a product and a process that really worked, the equity in the company lost almost all of its value. And for all intents and purposes, as an investment, it was a total failure. And so as an investment in terms of my time, it was not a failure because I got a lot of great experience there and I learned a lot of things. But from a monetary perspective, it was a huge failure. And I want to say that up front because there were things that I liked that I constantly told myself would be the saving grace of the company, and there were things that I ignored. And some of the things that I ignored probably more than I should have were the facts that we did miss production goals sometimes. Sometimes it was a product of unexpected things popping up. And what I'll give to Elon Musk's credit is when you're trying to do something new and you're trying to do it a completely different way than the industry has been built around, you are going to run into a lot of roadblocks. Nobody is doubting that he can produce vehicles and that even the vehicles are fast and that they're aesthetically pleasing. But when you're trying to do something completely different in any sector, whether it's alternative energy or any other sector, you're going to run into a lot of roadblocks that you may not have been able to anticipate from the get-go because you're not running from a standard playbook. So the company that I had previously worked for hit a number of these problems. And also, too, I think to some degree, the executives overpromised. And whether or not it was overpromising on purpose or whether it was just being overzealous is another conversation for another day. I mean, personally, I still believe that some of the promises that we weren't able to uphold were, most of them were things that we genuinely thought that we could accomplish, and it just turned out that we couldn't. And so for Tesla, I see a lot of that in Elon Musk. You know, a lot of people will argue that he's a manipulator, that he's a liar, that he is saying these things to artificially pump up the stock, and we could argue those points. There's probably some things that I would take favor on both sides of the aisle there, but let's just give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's give Elon Musk the benefit of the doubt and say that all the things that he's saying in terms of overproduction are things that he believes. The goals that he's setting and the saying we're going to be cash flow positive and saying we won't need a capital raise and saying we'll produce 5,000 vehicles a week, let's just give him the benefit of the doubt and just assume that there's no malintent there. Because otherwise, you look in the other direction and he knows that these things aren't possible, like the one of the lawsuits claims, you know, that he was not going to hit Model 3 production numbers, yet he came out and said the shit anyways. If that's true, if he's knowingly providing false statements, I mean, that's just securities fraud, right? That's just fucking lying. So let's give him the benefit of the doubt here. Even if all of the goals he has been setting and the production goals and the cash flow goals are all coming from a place where somehow in his mind, cognitive dissonance is telling him that these things are possible, his track record is saying something else. And you can go speak to any noted Tesla critic and they'll show you statements he has made throughout the past where, you know, we're going to be a profitable company, or this is the last time we'll ever need a capital raise. And then you get into the argument over, well, he said need, not the last time we're going to do one, this, that, and the other. And when you look back at certain production goals he has set, even now with the Model 3, you look at the fact that he rolled out the Model 3 promising a $35,000 addition to the vehicle. I mean, that was the selling point. And here we are in July almost of 2018, and these $35,000 vehicles aren't even rolling off the line yet. So giving him the benefit of the doubt, I think that he needs to be taken skeptically and critically, and I think the company should be looked at through the same light. Now, I realize the bulls are going to hear what they want to hear, and the bears are going to hear what they want to hear. So let's try to objectively assess the fact that the company is now building cars in a tent. Okay, so if you're brand new to the Tesla story, and you don't know what's going on, Tesla has been rapidly trying to reach a goal of producing 5,000 vehicles a week. And that is the magic number that analysts and the company and everybody has really held up there as a point with which when the company gets there, they will become a profitable entity. Everybody thinks that when they hit 5,000 vehicles per week, there is going to be some operating leverage somewhere, and Tesla all of a sudden is going to be a profitable and cash flow positive company. So Tesla is doing everything they can to reach this goal of 5,000 cars per week. Now, you take profitability out of the equation and just think about this number, which has been repeated over and over and over in the press. It is now about hitting this number. It's not about whether or not profitability comes with it. It has turned into a story as to just whether or not they have the capacity, whether or not they have the organization, whether or not they have the team to roll out 5,000 cars per week. Now, granted, we could argue the financials in a separate podcast. Is that what's going to push them to profitability? Is it not going to? We'll see. We'll see in coming weeks. Hopefully, if the company hits their number, we should be able to look at the financials accordingly. And we should look very closely at the financials too, because there are ways for companies to make themselves look cash flow positive for a quarter, or look profitable for a quarter, or look like they have the capacity for making 5,000 vehicles per week, or any number of these little tricks they can do by extrapolating other numbers or moving around cash or bringing in extra cash from things like, now they're asking for $2,500 for people that have reserved Model 3, so that cash is going to come in immediately, and You can stop paying the bills for a month, 2 months, to try to make the cash situation look a little bit better. I mean, in that case, all you're doing is delaying the inevitable. But if Tesla gets to a position where they do show a profit Q3, Q4, or they do show cash flow positive, people should look very closely at the financials. But right now, it's not even about that. It's about this 5,000 car per week number. And there is so much pressure and so much emphasis on this number. It is just, if he does 4,900, it's not going to cut it. People in the media and investors and everybody, the whole world is watching to see if he can produce 5,000 cars per week. So one of the big selling points on Tesla as a company, as an investment, as an automaker from the get-go was the fact that their production line was going to be state-of-the-art. So if you haven't followed this story, the bird's eye level view of the story goes as follows. From the get-go, Elon Musk said, you know, we're going to have a production facility that's second to none. He has been calling it the Alien Dreadnought, which is essentially a nod at a futuristic type production facility where there are robotics hanging off of the ceiling and there are robotics hanging off the floor and there's robots hanging off of other robots. And the vision was to create this incredible production facility, an incredible production line that would be more automated, more technologically savvy, and just all around better than anything that anybody in the auto industry had ever done before. The problem is that auto companies that have been around for a long time, whether it's Ford or General Motors or whatever, they've really perfected the science of these assembly lines. They have perfected exactly how much can be done in an automated fashion, how much can be done by hand, and what the most cost-effective way to produce vehicles is. In terms of Darwinism and in terms of the natural evolution of automotive assembly lines, Ford and General Motors, you have to figure, are probably on the very, very front line. They produce an enormous amount of vehicles. They do it with fantastic efficiency. I think a VP from Ford tweeted the other day, you know, we have a brand new F-150 that rolls off the line every 53 seconds or whatever it is, with stunning efficiency and consistency. So these guys have it figured out. So to kind of barge into the auto industry and say, really, without any serious experience, that you're going to be able to just build something that is going to trump anything and everything the auto industry has already done, well, just because we got more capital and we have more this and more that, and we're going to make it more automated, results in exactly what happened with Tesla, which is they tried to create this all automated factory, and then just about a year ago or whatever it was, they wound up ripping half the shit out of the factory. They had a complex system of conveyor belts, I think the article said. They had, you know, a production facility that was supposed to be 100% automated until they found out the hard way that there's some parts of the automotive manufacturing process that can't be automated. So all the shit that they had, you know, brought in and all of the technological, quote-unquote advances that they had made, well, half that shit, they had to rip it out of the factory and they had to bring in workers. And there was one, you know, it's like when an article is issued as a correction in a newspaper. This was kind of on page, you know, 14 when they ripped all the shit out. Whereas when the facility was being promoted, it was, you know, kind of on the front page of the paper. It was happening at a point where the company was still in, you know, very, very baby growth mode and they were raising capital and the name was still up and coming and the press on the company was very good. And this was, you know, it was funny to Elon Musk. He joked about it looking like an alien warship because there was so much, there were so many robotics. There were, there were a couple pictures I saw of really, I think I read today, one of the articles, you know, they took a bunch of the robotics and they bolted them to the ceiling, which is in order to save space. Or in order to cram more stuff into one area. And they thought this was going to be like some novel solution that nobody had ever thought of. Well, of course people have thought of it. And of course, you know, it turned out that it didn't work for one reason or another. I don't know why, whether it was calibration, whether it was poor use of space, whether, you know, I'm not an expert in auto assembly lines. All I know is the way that their production facility was pitched, is very different than the way that it has wound up now. So in addition to ripping out the conveyor belts and a bunch of the shit that they were pumping at first would be revolutionary, they have now erected a tent outside of the Fremont facility, and there's pictures of it online, and I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you've probably seen it. They've basically built a tent. It's like a, it's not a tent, but it's a one of these mobile type buildings that you can put together in 48 hours or 36 hours and have it up to code. And, you know, it looks like if a stiff breeze caught the thing at 10 miles an hour, it would fly into the ocean. It doesn't look, you know, it's not a concrete building on a firm foundation. It is a, it's kind of a tent is what it is. It probably has, I don't know what the frame is made out of, but it's somewhere in between tent and building, like camping tent and building. It obviously doesn't have cloth ceilings, but it's not, doesn't have a traditional roof either. It looks like plastic or fiberglass or thin sheets of aluminum or something. I'm not sure what it is, but not super sturdy. With that being said, they are building vehicles in this tent by hand, apparently. So the production facility, which was supposed to be revolutionary and state-of-the-art and change the everything you know about the auto industry, that's not operating the way that it should. As a matter of fact, it doesn't really even seem to be operating with the same efficiency as whatever the normal standard is in the automotive industry. So now we have a tent where people are reportedly hand-building cars outside. There's a forklift, and you know, there were some pictures of it on Zero Hedge a couple days ago. Somebody flew a drone up over this. So they've parked two massive, like, 18-wheelers out front, so you can't actually see inside and see what's going on. You know, I don't really understand why, and it's not like they have some type of trade secret out there. If they're producing vehicles and all's well, maybe you would want to show the world. But anyways, they have two 18-wheelers sitting out in front of it to kind of obscure the view. So somebody flew a drone up and got a couple of pictures inside, and it looks like a makeshift assembly line. I mean, it doesn't look like anything from the future at all. It looks like an assembly line where you load a, you know, car frame in one end and you add the doors and all the other shit as it goes along. And, you know, hopefully at the end of the line, you wind up with a car that doesn't collapse as soon as it hits the ground. So this is the big push that they're making to try and hit this number. Now, again, throwing away the fact that if they do hit the 5,000 car per week number, that doesn't necessarily guarantee that the financials are going to get better. The fact that this is what they have to do, and reportedly, Reuters had a report out yesterday that said, you know, not only are they not close to meeting their goals, but they took the teams off of producing the Model S and the Model X to help with the Model 3 production. So they have it is an all hands on deck scenario right now. And to think that the way that they're doing things, I mean, first off, it's comical that the production facility isn't working the way that they thought it was going to. I mean, that's kind of a red flag in and of itself. Fine, we'll ignore that. But the fact that they have the entire staff now kind of on this project, well, that's just going to create bottlenecks other places in the company. So for anybody that's worked in production, and I've worked in a factory, you know what happens is when you bring all hands on deck to one project, everything else gets neglected. And when you neglect everything else, regardless of whether or not your intentions are good, you wind up with bottlenecks elsewhere and other problems creep up. So the other thing that we have to think about is, say they can produce 5,000 Model 3s per week. Well, how can they sustain that going forward? If it's requiring a tent with a manual production line that nobody foresaw the company ever needing when they talked about, you know, producing hundreds of thousands of Model 3 vehicles in the past, and they need all of the employees from the Model S and the Model X line to contribute to building the Model 3, well, what does that mean in terms of how sustainable it's going to be going forward? Because at some point, you're going to have to go back to the Model X's At some point, the Model S's will have to continue to be built. At some point, people are going to have to go back to whatever their stations were prior. Unless you're just going to focus the whole company on building Model 3s from now on. In which case, shouldn't be out there talking about producing other models. The Reuters report yesterday said that, well, things are backed up now in the paint factory. And then, of course, Elon Musk tweeted out a picture of the paint shop, which didn't really seem to show anything aside from a couple cars being painted. So I'm not really sure if that was supposed to be a response or what. I mean, it's for people, if that is an explanation or that's an answer that, hey, everything's fine in the paint shop, then you're not, you know, then you're not thinking critically about things. There's nothing that, because he tweeted out a photo of the paint shop, there's nothing there proves that there isn't a line of 2,000 cars still waiting to get painted outside of the photo. But, which, by the way, I think it's a ridiculous thing for him to do, but whatever. With that aside, let's say that the paint shop at the company is backed up. This is one of the bottlenecks that I'm talking about. If you've worked in production, you've worked in a factory, and my experience has been relatively limited working in a factory, 2 years, 2.5 years or whatever, but bottlenecks occur when people are not, when you take things out of order and you can't look at the entire supply chain or the entire production chain as a whole. So what happens is if you smash everybody together to produce Model 3s, well, you're not going to be able to get them painted in time because the paint shop was only set up to paint X amount of vehicles per whatever. And now you got another bottleneck. So you have to take resources and move them over to the paint shop. And so instead of just taking these people and moving them from one project to the other, to the other, to the other, from the beginning, they should have thought about how much they wanted to do in terms of capacity, and they should have built accordingly. But bottlenecks are a way of life in any type of production. I just think that up front, the fact that we're here, we're at this desperate kind of situation where the company is just doing anything to hit this 5,000 number, anything, is such a far cry from what was promised and what people thought from the get-go. By the way, myself included, because years ago, I saw that Elon Musk was hitting most of the targets that he was putting out there. You know, when the company first IPO'd, he said he was going to do things and he was doing them. It was only, you know, the last 3-4 years that the company has been trying to kind of cross the chasm, as they say, from a startup kind of research and development company to a company that's going to be a fully profitable mass production company, which is an insanely difficult thing to do, really in any industry, but to do it with a process that isn't, you know, arguably isn't the best standards of the industry, and to set goals that are kind of unreasonable and to break ground in an industry where the cost efficiencies and the material balance and all of the things that have to go into production have not been vetted, you know, in any type of significant manner, at least to me, at least to other investors. People don't even know if it's possible. To do that is insanely difficult. And hence, the skepticism started for me some years back. And as we have kind of moved along, the idea of this carrot kind of being on a string in front of investors, in front of analysts, in front of Wall Street and the public, and that carrot kind of getting further and further away, but everybody's still kind of chasing it, has become a little bit more evident. Plus, the behavior of the company CEO, not only is it not really becoming of a public company CEO, but it's in some ways it's very worrisome. Look, there's no doubt that erratic, you know, Ross Gerber said this. Oh, well, you know, Richard Branson's a crazy guy. Look at, there was one other example, I don't know, but you know, you look at a guy like John Legere or something, right? Like, obviously the guy's nuts, but he's doing well, and he's doing well for his company. And Richard Branson, he's saying, I want my CEO to be a little crazy. You can make that argument, but you got to remember that, you know, that's what you're going to get. If you're okay with the CEO lashing out at the media and you're okay with him tweeting out a photo of the paint shop, you know, 30 minutes after the paint shop was criticized in a Reuters article, and you're okay with the CEO kind of being erratic, then you have to take the good with the bad, right? I guess if he wasn't heralded as a genius in the media, the company wouldn't have gotten all the traction that it's gotten already, nor would it probably have gotten a lot of the financial benefits that have been extended to it over the last couple of years. So you got to take that good with the bad, which to me is now that the company's in a crunch, now that the media is kind of looking at them in a critical manner, the CEO may not be as conservative or as poised under pressure. And certainly that looks to be the case. It was also announced today, and I read on Twitter right before I started the podcast, that four more executives have left the company. And I am trying actually right now while I am recording this to multitask and find those four people. But I did see the executive departure list prior to doing the podcast, and it did look like there were four more additions to the executive departure list. I don't have it right in front of me. Do I? Is it here? I don't. Okay, and I don't believe in editing these things, so I'm just going to... Oh, it looks like Trip Chowdhury is back on CNBC. Love that guy. Love him. Yeah, I can't find the fucking thing. Do your research elsewhere, all right, fools? It's out there somewhere. It's on Twitter. But it looked as though I think one was the... I know one for certain was reported actually by Electric, believe it or not. The chief information officer wound up leaving, supposedly as a result of the company's reorganization. Unlike most corporations of its size, Tesla has only a handful of C-suite executives, and now it has lost a second one this year as Electric learns that Tesla let go Gary Clark, its chief information officer. Tesla doesn't have positions like chief operating officer or chief marketing officer. Instead, the company's C-suite executive team is limited to Elon Musk, CEO, J.B. Straubel, chief technology officer, and Gabriel Toledano, chief people officer. Love that. Earlier this year, Tesla also had a chief accounting officer, but he left the company in March, and Tesla doesn't appear to have replaced him. Well, that seems to be relevant information. The chief people officer is still there, but the chief accounting officer left. Yeah, I would probably focus my energy on having a chief accounting officer before I had a chief people officer, whatever that is. But whatever, I'm not a public company CEO. So now the company's chief information officer has hit the road, and there were three other, which I think were smaller executive departures that this guy had found via LinkedIn and one or two other ways. So again, the issue of employee turnover comes up, which is an issue that people have been talking about for a long time. And again, it makes us question whether or not there is something going on with the tone at the top. I mean, this goes back to Elon Musk. Is he erratic as a boss in the same way that he kind of is erratic in dealing with the public and dealing with criticisms? I don't know. I mean, I've never worked for him, but certainly the amount of people that have left the company over the last 3 years in, you know, relatively significant positions seems to be very relevant. This latest addition, chief information officer, is another C-suite executive that's left. You know, the fact that Electric broke this story is interesting because The Drive did a great article today about Electric and how Tesla has basically put that company on the map. If you don't know who Electric is, they're a website. They do mostly, they're supposed to be a website on alternative energy, but mostly they're a division of, they appear to be a division. They come off like, to me, a division of Tesla's communication team. They get leaked a lot of information, they have a lot of scoops, and their coverage of Tesla has been relatively rosy pretty much all the time, which is why I'm a little surprised that this got reported through them. But these scoops and the fact that Elon Musk has retweeted their stuff on Twitter to his 22 million followers or whatever it is, has done the site well. And I think I read in the article today they have something like 4 million monthly viewers, which is 4 million more than the QTR podcast gets. So it's interesting that Electric was the publication to report this. And pretty much as the Drive article said today, the website will probably make it or break it just as Tesla either makes it or breaks it. So it'll be interesting to see how electric fares in an event where Tesla doesn't do as well as everybody think it's going to do, or fulfills one of many ominous sounding short seller slash critical scenarios that people think will happen to it. And if, of course, if the company does well, electric will probably become one of the industry standards in, you know, I guess, alternative energy reporting. It's an interesting article by The Drive. I would find it and read it if I were you. I'm going to tell you the name of it right now. Hang on. The Drive Electric. The name of the article is The Truth Behind Electric's Shady Alliance with Tesla. And it is written by Edward Niedermeyer, who I believe is a writer for he's a writer for another website. I can't remember what it is. But Niedermeyer admittedly has done, you know, critical coverage of the company. And so this kind of falls in line. Talks about the story of how this guy, Frederick Lambert, who is the head writer for Electric, has kind of brought the site to its viewership glory by having his articles and scoops and things that he's able to ascertain from the company promoted by the company or promoted by Elon Musk, and having the site basically be a stop for people who are fans of the company, undying fans of the company. So interesting that the company also this week asked Model 3 reservation holders to chalk up another $2,500. So this is an interesting scenario. Also, it was reported this week that U.S. reservation holders have now all been invited to configure their vehicles. So what it looks like is that Model 3 reservations could now finally start to be pulled through and produced, which is a good thing for this quarter, next quarter. But then the question is, where are the rest of the reservations? Are there going to be other reservations? Is there going to be more demand for the Model 3? Is it going to be we do 5,000 cars a week for 3 months and then all of a sudden we don't have any more demand? I think what is supposed to happen is at that point the company's then going to produce the $35,000 version of the vehicle, and that supposedly should generate or be a catalyst for more demand for the vehicle. Ross Gerber certainly seemed to think that's the case. You know, he's telling me people aren't reserving them now because they don't want to wait. And of course, when I asked him when he reserved his, well, 2 years ago, you know. and I guess he thinks also that the coming of the $35,000 model will catalyze some further demand. But the fact that they're asking for another $2,500 for people that have their vehicles reserved is interesting. It's just another step in between the initial reservation deposit and paying for the vehicle. If you're confident that you're going to fulfill all of those orders and you're going to have people pay, there's really no need to add an additional step in between the deposit and paying for the order. The only reason that you would add another step and ask for additional money is if you need the money up front or you're not confident that people are going to pay when the time comes to pay. So that move to me looks like the move of a company that needs to shore up its finances in short order and needs to get cash in the door. Maybe it's not the truth. I mean, who knows why they're doing it? Maybe there's some reasonable explanation for it that I don't know about. But it's certainly the optics of it don't look good, just as the optics of building vehicles in a tent by hand outside of the Fremont factory after you basically promised the investing public and the media that you were going to rewrite the book on auto manufacturing doesn't look good either. So when you take those things, you combine them with some additional team member turnover, I think a lot of questions are still up in the air about Tesla. Nice thing is, over the next week or two, we will get definitive answers about the production at the company. They're going to have to update investors. So the equity, the stock, continues to hold up despite the fact that the bonds had a little bit of a rocky week. A lot of times people will tell you the bond market leads the equity market. The bond market's the smarter money. The equity market is the less smart money, I guess. The bonds have come off a little bit. The equity has pretty much held up around that $350 per share number. A lot of questions still on the table that need to be answered. How long can the equity stay up there? Can it go higher? What justifies a higher valuation? Can the company raise money? Will they issue equity? Will they issue bonds? Will they be cash flow positive? Are they hitting their production numbers? Elon Musk was all over Twitter again today and yesterday, I think, not yesterday, but the 2 days ago, that evening at like 1:30 local time in the morning for him, was all over Twitter. Yeah, he's making jokes and he's talking about unicorns and shit and this and that and the other. Look, he certainly seems to be in good spirits still. Whether that's a question of him being completely delusional or it's him knowing, maybe, that he's going to meet his targets and he's happy about it. Somebody suggested the other day, maybe the Reuters article that leaked saying that they would make 5,000, that they wouldn't make 5,000 a week, was the company leaking fake information on purpose. In other words, maybe the company came out and leaked to Reuters that they're not going to make their goal so that when they make it, it's a big surprise. That is wholly a horribly unprofessional thing to do if it is what has happened. However, I don't put it past them. I don't put it past them to do that. I don't think that would be off the table. If they were actually doing it, I think it is in Elon Musk's persona and character to do something like that. And while most people would say, ah, there's no way that happened because they got three sources, I would say there's a 1% chance that that's what happened. I'd probably give it a 10% chance. And it would certainly be interesting. So a lot of questions are going to be answered over the next 2 weeks when it comes to Tesla. And I look forward to doing another podcast then. But for now, ladies and gentlemen, it's Friday. It is time to get out of here. And I am stoked to be back. I'm stoked to be back from vacation. I have a couple more guests I'm talking to for next week. And I really look forward to getting back on a good clip of my podcasts. And again, you know, real quick, I just want to thank everybody for listening. The response to the podcast has been tremendous. And if it weren't for you guys that take the time to listen and take the time to shoot me letters of support, emails, direct messages, whatever, I probably would have bailed on this podcast project a while back. But the response has been great. And I have nobody to thank for that except for you guys and the guests that have been kind enough to come on. So we continue to fly aimlessly into the future, my kind friends. And I hope sincerely, by the way, that you all have a great weekend. I am out of here. Peace.